Sorry, Neil. My name is Gary Glass. I'm the director of the American Home Brewers Association for the BA. Before we get started, I just want a quick reminder, make sure that these things are on silent. Also, at the end of the session, we'll have Q&A. If you can please talk into the microphones that we had in the aisles here. That way we can record your questions, as well as make sure that everybody in the room can hear your questions. And then following the session, if you can go onto the CBC app and help us with feedback on this seminar, as well as all of the seminars, there's a button where you can rate each presentation. Our speaker for this session is Neil Witte, owner and president of Craft Quality Solutions, presenting CO2 carbonated, dealing with multiple carbonation levels on your draft system. Neil Witte is a 21-year veteran of the beer business who spent 19 years as a brewer and then field quality manager at Boulevard Brewing and Duval, USA. In 2017, he founded Craft Quality Solutions, providing market-based quality services to breweries, distributors, and retailers. Neil is a technical content specialist for the Cicerone certification program and is one of 18 Master Cicerones. He is the quality ambassador and co-draft quality ambassador for the Brewers Association, and he co-authored the Brewers Association Draft Quality Manual and Draft Beer Quality for Retailers. Please join me in welcoming Neil Witte.
Hello. Thanks for coming out, everybody. I appreciate it. Glad to see so many people here interested in draft beer. Hopefully you're as excited about it as I am. It's kind of a passion project of mine, working with draft beer, those of you who know me. We're going to talk about dealing with high carbonated beers on draft systems. This can be a problematic thing for people. A lot of you probably experienced some of these problems, and maybe that's why you're sitting here today, so you can learn a little bit more about how to manage this in your tap room or your tasting room or your restaurant or bar or whatever business you're in. Gary gave me a nice introduction, a little bit more about kind of where I come from. Gary mentioned I spent 19 years working at Boulevard Brewing Company. I started there as a brewer back in 97, and I brewed for about 3 years. And then John McDonald, the founder of the company, decided he wanted to have somebody working out in the marketplace dealing with all the issues that come up with draft beer and with beer in general in the marketplace. So largely it is kind of most of the quality issues that we were experiencing at the time. And a lot of the quality issues you see now in the marketplace really revolve around draft systems. There's so many things that can happen with draft beer. So I spent the next 16 years working with retailers and distributors and our sales team on all of the things that happened to beer out in the marketplace. So I did spend a lot of time working in the on-premise, working with line cleaners and draft technicians. I've installed systems for a long time for Boulevard Brewing Company, contracting out on behalf of Boulevard where it's legal, obviously. So I got a lot of experience in working with draft beer and all of the different things that can come up with draft beer. So, when I left a couple years ago, I started Craft Quality Solutions to kind of take some of that same work that I was doing and bring it out to the larger industry. So I'm still working with all tiers of the industry on quality issues that come up out in the marketplace. And I'm doing a lot more work now, content development and training for Cicerone. And with the ambassador roles I've got at the BA, talking to Brewers Guild groups and talking to related industry groups about draft quality issues and quality programs. So, one of the things that I get a lot through my business, are people coming to me with draft issues that they've got on a system where they get this special keg in, like a retailer gets a special keg from overseas, an imported beer that just pours solid foam and they don't know how to handle it. Or I'm working with a brewery who, has a system that's set up to to pour beer in a certain way, and it pours like, you know, 9 out of every 10 beers just fine, but there's this one beer that we have, it just doesn't work that great. And in working with them, I've, you know, come up with a few different good methods to be able to help them to pour the beer correctly. And so I kind of want to walk you through some of the basics of how the average system is set up, what the limitations are of your average American draft beer system, and some things that we could do to that system to help you pour that one beer that you brew that, you know, has a higher CO2 content, or maybe that imported beer that you get into your bar that just doesn't seem to pour right, because there's some handy pointers that we can do. Okay. Cool. I've been instructed to speak right into this. Can you guys hear me? Raise your hand if you can't hear me. Nobody can hear me. All right. Let's talk about the standard system. What does the standard system look like? The standard system is built on a certain concept around dispense gas that is really based on two principles. So we talk about when I'm designing a system, and a well-designed system makes a couple assumptions about what the goals are for dispense gas. So dispense gas is really there for two particular reasons. One is to keep the beer properly carbonated. So this is one that a lot of people don't really consider. They always kind of jump to number two, which is to push the beer from the keg to the faucet. Pushing the beer from the keg to the faucet is obviously very important, but the dispense gas role is also there to keep the beer properly carbonated. So these are two key things that we are balancing and making sure that we're managing both of these things at the same time. And this has a real impact in how we design the system. So taking a step back and talking about the nomenclature we're going to use, a lot of you might already know this, probably do, but in case you don't, I'm going to be talking about CO2 content in terms of volumes per volume. So when I talk about volumes of CO2, what I mean is this is the standard measurement that most of you who are brewers are using this way of measuring CO2. Some brewers use grams per liter. It's more commonly used in Europe than it is in the U.S. But volumes basically means that if you have, for example, a 2.5 volume CO2 beer, and you were to be able to magically take that CO2 out of the keg by itself, at standard temperature and pressure, that CO2 by itself would fill up 2.5 equal size containers, or in this case, 2.5 kegs. So we've got 2.5 kegs of CO2 that is compressed down into one keg of beer, and it's pretty volatile. It goes in and out of solution really easily. And so our job is to manage that, to make sure that we are keeping that consistent. So if we have that 2.5 volume beer that we're tapping onto a system, that the first beer we pour is 2.5 volumes, and then the last beer we pour, be it, you know, a couple days or even a couple weeks later, that last beer is also 2.5 volumes. That's really our goal there. So the two main factors we use to control this are temperature and pressure. Now, there's a few other minor factors, but that's the things that we concentrate on the most, these two main players, temperature and pressure. So if you have a keg, for example, that is at 38 degrees, there's only one pressure of straight CO2 for a 2.5 volume beer that is going to keep that beer properly carbonated. So for a 2.5 volume beer at sea level in a 38 degree cooler, that would be 11.3 PSI. Now, we don't really talk tenths of a pound when we're looking at regulators. Most of your regulators aren't going to show a tenth of a pound. In fact, I'll give anybody $10 if they can show me a draft system that has one that shows tenth of a pound. Sometimes we're lucky just to get it to a single pound. So we'll call that 11. But a way to look where that number comes from is really from solubility tests that the American Society of Brewing Chemists did back in the 40s. We took their charts for the draft beer quality manual and reformulated it into a kind of a different form chart that we can use to look up ideal pressures. So this is found in the Draft Beer Quality Manual. As an aside, if you're not familiar with the Draft Beer Quality Manual, it's a great resource. A lot of the stuff that I'm going to talk about today, you can find some of that stuff in there. The Draft Beer Quality Manual project was started by the Draft Quality Subcommittee 12 years ago, and we worked together with, it was craft brewers and the large domestic brewers, came together to speak with one voice about draft quality issues, everything from system design, gas suspense, line cleaning, etc. So this chart is in there, and you can see, looking at that, how, you know, if you follow the 2.5 down to 38 degrees, you come up with 11.3. That is the pressure, the exact pressure that you need to apply in order to keep that 2.5 volumes consistent all the way through the life of the keg. And you can see how that changes as the CO2 content changes. It's pretty intuitive, obviously. So as you go to 2.6 and 2.7 and 2.8, that's at the top of the chart there. As your carbonation level increases, the amount of pressure that you need to apply to keep that beer carbonated naturally has to increase in accordance. At the same time, as temperature changes, and we won't talk too much about temperature fluctuation because we're talking about high carbonated beers today, but there also needs to be an accompanying pressure change that goes along with temperature changes as well. So temperature and CO2 content, as those things change, it's going to kind of create a moving target, really, for the ideal pressure that you need to apply to the keg. There is a note there at the bottom about altitude. Won't really talk much about that, but it is important to note that if you live, for example, here in Denver, your gauges are going to read differently, so we do have an adjustment to those numbers. I also want to say that that everybody, and I say this every time I talk about this content in front of a group, is that I'm not telling you that you need to all run out and put 11.3 pounds of pressure on your kegs. These are theoretical numbers, and these are real numbers, but I'm using this as an example to kind of paint a larger picture. Everybody's system is kind of unique in their own way, so. It's hard for me to give you direct instructions on what exactly to do with your particular system. And obviously, if you have questions, we can talk about it afterwards or during Q&A. Another way to look at this concept is graphically, so you can see with the pictures here how the different pressures that you're going to need for different CO2 content. So in the middle, we've got our 2.5 volume beer, 11 PSI, fairly well-balanced, or a well-balanced keg, we would call that. And then you can see, if we have a 2.3 volume beer, our pressure requirements are less. If we have 2.65, for example, our pressure requirements are higher. So not only is that the case, but the inverse is also the case, right? So if we have a 2.5 volume beer and we apply 11 pounds, that's going to keep it carbonated. But if we're only applying 9 pounds to the 2.5 volume beer, we're going to essentially, over the course of a couple of days, we're going to create a 2.3 volume beer. So these are the pressures that we will actually be creating different carbonation levels if we're not careful. So that's not really our goal here, actually. Our goal is to maintain that carbonation level. So what we don't want to be doing is causing the gas to break out by putting too little pressure on the beer or causing too much gas to absorb into the beer by applying too much pressure. So the way these things look are also important. So if you're applying too much pressure to the keg and you're creating 2.65, or if you're creating 2.7 or 2.8, that beer might be coming out of the faucet totally clear, and it might look fine. But as it gets higher and higher in carbonation, you're changing the character of the beer, for one, because CO2 obviously is an ingredient in beer, and it affects the way you perceive bitterness and some of the other flavors in the beer, right? So you're changing, really, the beer from what the brewer intended, for one. And as that CO2 content gets higher and higher, it becomes really volatile. So if you're pouring like a 2.8 or a 2.9 beer into a glass, it might pour clear out of the faucet. But when it hits the glass, it just explodes into a big glass full of foam. So, you know, that's pretty symptomatic of overcarbonated beer. On the other hand, if you are falling below your ideal pressure, so if you have that 2.5 volume beer and you're putting 9 pounds on it, the gas is going to break out inside the keg. And the gas that's breaking out inside the keg just stays in the keg. But maybe more importantly, from a pourability standpoint, is the gas also breaks out in the line. So as the gas breaks out in the line, now you have foam at the tap. So that ends up being a real problem for being able to pour beer into the glass. So how does this affect our beer in different system design circumstances? So in a short draw system, if we are using straight CO2 and we've got that 2.5 volume beer, 11 PSI, we can accomplish both our goals of dispense gas. We're keeping the beer carbonated and we're pushing the beer to the faucet. The 11 pounds is plenty of pressure to push it, you know, through the short draft line in like a keg box, or if you have lines going through the cooler wall or something like that, your short draw system. A long draw system, though, it's a different story. So if you're pushing beer 100 feet, which is not uncommon, a lot of you here probably work on systems that are 100 feet or longer, 11 pounds of pressure on the keg isn't going to do the trick. It's going to give you just a trickle at the tap. So we have a flow rate issue now. So knowing what we know about carbonation and how it reacts with different pressures, we can't just jack up the pressure to get it to flow faster, because then we're going to overcarbonate the beer. So this is where blended gas comes in, because right now we are only accomplishing one goal. We're keeping it carbonated at 11 pounds, but we're not pushing it to the faucet. If we use a blended gas, this is really the goal of blended gas. This is why we have blended gas in a system, is to apply a higher pressure to the keg, still keep it properly carbonated, but we have now a higher overall pressure that'll drive the beer a longer distance. So in this example, we've got 70% CO2 with the balance being nitrogen. Nitrogen is the preferred gas for this. Nitrogen at the pressures we're operating at in the standard draft system, nitrogen is not going to absorb into the beer. Nitrogen also, when it comes in contact with the beer in the headspace or the keg, it's not going to affect the flavor of the beer. So it really is kind of inert in that sense. It doesn't affect the beer. So that lower percentage of CO2 allows us to get a higher overall pressure on the keg, in this case, 22 pounds. So 22 pounds now will drive the beer a long distance. So nitrogen is giving us that extra push pressure. So you can see these three charts here. This is really just an illustration of really the three most common gases that we've got in a system. You've got 60%, 70%, and 100% CO2. So 100%, this probably makes up 95% of all the long draw systems out there that are designed correctly, outside of the ones that are using nitro gas for everything, but that's a whole other topic for a different day. So 100% would probably include your beer pump systems as well. 70% and 60% make up the vast majority of the gas blenders that are out there. And so you'll see, you know, we've got widely different for a 2.5 volume beer. We've got some pretty different applied pressures that we'll be working with here for the 60 and the 70 and the 100%. So 60% for a 2.5 beer is 28. For 70%, it's 22. And 100%, it's 11. So we've got a pretty wide range of pressures that we might be working with on a standard system. So with all of that in mind, as we're designing a system, when I'm setting up a system, or when a system is being designed, correctly, this is usually the first thing that's being done, is deciding, all right, here's the gas I'm going to use. Here's the, you know, we're going to be at this temperature. We're going to use this gas. We're going to have this pressure applied to the keg. And now we're going to build the system around it to get the flow rate that we want. So in order to do that, we have to measure resistance of flow in the system. So resistance of flow is made up of several things in the system. Really, a couple of things in particular: gravity and the tubing. So all of those things, those two things in particular, are going to resist the flow of the beer. So if you're pushing beer up 4 feet, for example, in a keg box, that's not going to resist flow very much. But if you're pushing it up 4 stories, that's a whole lot of resistance to flow, right? So that's kind of the concept we're talking about here. And we can measure that resistance of every aspect of the system. And we measure that in pounds. And so when we add up the total resistance of gravity and the tubing and everything that goes into the system, and we have that number in pounds, if we have that number equal the pounds of pressure that we apply to the keg with the gas, if those two numbers are the same, then we get the flow rate that we want. So this is kind of the formula we use. So we're taking gravity and tubing. So gravity, if we're going up 12 feet, for example, gravity, for every foot we go up, we've got a half pound of resistance. So if we're going up 12 feet from the keg to the faucet, then we're going to have 6 pounds of resistance. And if we're, depending on what we're using for tubing, we've got a chart here. This comes from the Draft Beer Quality Manual again. And these are some common restriction values for different lengths of tubing. So, you know, a really common size tubing for a draft system, for a long draw draft system, is 3/8 ID tubing of barrier tubing. That has, for every foot, it's got 0.06 pounds of resistance, not very much. For 5/16, it's 0.1. So we can add all of this up. And it varies. So you can see that that resistance value varies depending on the type of tubing, the length of the tubing, and the diameter of the tubing. So when we add all these things up, if we're working with, from our example before, that 70% blend, right, that we're using 22 pounds of pressure on our 2.5 volume beer, we've got 22 pounds of applied pressure. We want our system resistance to be 22 pounds. So we're adding all these things up. So this is how the standard system is designed. So everything gets set up this way, and then we end up with a system that runs at one temperature, has one gas coming in, and it has one set restriction. And it all runs at a single pressure. So you can kind of see, all of a sudden, we've kind of got this well-designed system. It's like, oh, wait a second here. There's really only, this is a system designed for basically one level of CO2, right? This is the standard setup. It doesn't have the ability built in necessarily to handle a wide variety of CO2 content. So this is kind of the issue that we have in the standard American system. So let's talk about some things we can do within that framework and some adjustments that we can possibly make to that system, equipment that we can use to assist in pouring a high carbonated beer. So pressure adjustment. Obviously, if you have a higher carbonated beer, based on what we just talked about, a pressure adjustment would be the prudent thing to do, right? We want to adjust the pressure to keep beer properly carbonated. In order to do that, obviously, first of all, you have to have your system set up to be able to adjust pressure on individual kegs, right? So a lot of systems are set up, and, you know, years ago, when, you know, before this really started to, you know, when I was designing systems 15 years ago, a lot of the carbonation levels were pretty the same, pretty similar, and this one-size-fits-all system, you know, didn't end up being as problematic as it is nowadays. So I used to put in a lot of systems that had, you know, a setup like on the right, where you've got a regulator going to a splitter, and you got one regulator applying pressure to four different kegs. So if those are all pretty much the same CO2 content, no problem, right? Well, if you've got one of those that you need to adjust the pressure on, good luck. You can't really do that. So in order to make pressure adjustments, obviously, you need to have something that looks like what you've got on the left. Dedicated regulators. And so this is also something that is one of the big obstacles here is in order to really use a chart like we were talking about, you have to know the CO2 content to really dial it in. Well, you know, a lot of you are brewers and you know, if you have some basic equipment, you probably have the ability to, you probably know exactly what your CO2 content is. I worked for a brew pub for quite a while before I brewed at Boulevard, and we used to do just kind of like a kind of little voodoo thing with the Zwickel to figure out what the CO2 content was, and we didn't really measure it. And we just kind of winged it, and it worked out for us, but we weren't really distributing beer, and we were carbonating everything pretty much the same. But if you have, you know, so I know a lot of people are doing things like that, but if you have the ability to measure it, obviously you've got a leg up. If you're a retailer running a bar, this is not necessarily widely available information, right? Brewers aren't typically publishing CO2 content. So, you know, this can be an obstacle. Some general guidelines, if you're dealing with craft beer, a vast majority of them are going to be pretty close to 2.5 volumes. I know this is a generalization, and you might be like, you know what, none of my beers are 2.5 volumes. And that's fine, I get it. Like, I hesitate to generalize too much, but we can, if in a time of necessity, we're in the with, you know, without knowing any other information, it's generally pretty safe to say a lot of craft beers are going to fall in the 2.5 range, and a lot of domestic beers, the Bud Miller Coors of the world, are going to fall in the 2.7 range. So that's a pretty decent rule of thumb that you can go by. Other beers, a lot of imported specialty beers, wild ales, things like that can be 2.8 plus. So, you know, that gets a lot more into kind of mystery territory there. So, you know, hopefully you have a good idea. If you do know your CO2 content, then you can look it up on the chart. Look it up on the chart, figure out that pressure that needs to be applied, and turn your regulator up, right? That's pretty simple. If you're keeping it within a certain range, if it's a minimal pressure adjustment, you should be okay from a flow rate perspective, right? So if you're typically running a beer at, say, 12 PSI, and you need to bump it to 14 because it's a little bit higher carbonated, that's probably not going to, it's going to speed things up at the faucet, but it's probably not going to speed things up at the faucet so much that you've got problems all of a sudden, right? Typically, if you keep things within a 5 PSI range, you're going to be okay. I say that because those are based on tests that I ran years ago, just trying different, you know, different flow rates at different pressures to see what worked. And there's a pretty decent variance there. Our goal for flow rate when we design systems is a gallon a minute. But it doesn't have to be a gallon a minute. It could be a little faster, it could be a little slower, right? So there's some wiggle room there. That's what that 5 PSI is all about. So the chart is very helpful if you know CO2 content. Also, McDantum makes an app. There's a free app out there called Easy Blend, which is fantastic. I've got it on my phone. And you can just plug in all the information, you know, temperature, CO2 content, altitude, alcohol content. It factors in a lot of those things as well. And it'll spit out the pressure that you need to apply to the keg. And so this is all pretty straightforward stuff. But let's say you don't know what it is, and it's fairly, you know, it's a little bit higher than what you normally put on. You've got a 100% CO2 system. You're set up to pour at, say, 12 PSI, and now you've got a beer that's a little bit higher carbonated. So what's going to happen is you tap that higher carbonated beer, and now that 12 PSI isn't enough to keep the gas in solution. So it breaks out inside the keg, which is one thing, right? The gas stays in the keg, but it also breaks out in the line. So it's foamy. So this is a really handy test that actually I learned this years ago when I went to draft school at Coors Brewing Company. And they taught this at their workshops. And it's simple flashlight test. So what you do is, first of all, you want to make sure that your keg is cold. You want to make sure that it is within, that it's exactly where it needs to be temperature-wise. So you can't be doing this with a keg that you just put in the cooler. Kegs take a long time to get down to temp, and they need to be in a cooler for at least 24 hours as a good rule of thumb before they're actually at that temp that they're going to be at. So make sure your keg's cold, tap it, pour a little beer through, just enough to fill the line. It's probably going to be foamy if you know it's a higher carbonated beer. And then you take a flashlight and you go back in the cooler and you shine a flashlight in the tube right as it's coming out of the coupler, right at the top there. And if you shine the flashlight in, you'll be able to see bubbles breaking out. So that first step on there is to start at a low pressure that you know is probably going to be too low, right? This says 5. You might start at even 10 if you know that's going to be too low, right? So since it's too low, it's going to be foamy at the tap. And when you shine that flashlight in there, you're going to see bubbles breaking out. That's actively degassing beer. That's causing the foamy beer. So at that point, what you do is you adjust the pressure on the regulator up by 1, maybe 2 pounds if it's a whole lot of bubble breakout. And then you go back up front, pour a little bit more beer, basically enough to flush out the line. And then you go back into your cooler and you shine the flashlight in there again. And you check to see if there are more bubbles. There's probably going to be less because you have a little bit more pressure on it. And so you repeat this process until there are no more bubbles. That means you've reached your ideal pressure where the gas is not breaking out anymore. And at that point, your beer should pour correctly. So if you're brewing in a pub and you don't have a Zomnagel or you're not measuring CO2 and you got this temperamental beer, you think it might be a little more highly carbonated, you don't know what the CO2 level is, you can use this method to walk through and find out what that pressure is. Same thing as if you get this mystery keg from overseas in your tap room or your bar and it's foamy, go through this process and you can get that beer to pour. So this will work without any other system adjustment, again, as long as you're keeping within that kind of 5 PSI range. And this is something that you're going to have to kind of judge for yourself, like what you're comfortable with as far as a flow rate. So if you're within 5 PSI, you're probably going to be okay with a little bit of increased flow rate. You might decide that it's coming out a little bit too fast, and there's ways that we can deal with that, and we'll talk about that. But that's a great method for adjusting that and figuring that out. So when it comes to blended gas systems, it's a little bit different dynamic. Because with the blended gas, if we're below the balance point in the keg, we could have gas breakout in the keg, but we could still have a really high hydraulic pressure in the line that is keeping the gas from breaking out in the line. So it might pour clear, but it might be degassing in the keg. So you're changing the character of the beer, but it still is pouring okay. So, and this can be a difficult thing to troubleshoot especially if you don't know the CO2 content, right? So we don't know the CO2 level, it's not actively degassing, but I know it's a high carbonated beer, and this system is set up for, you know, kind of craft beer level CO2 volumes. You know you're probably, you know, you're probably out of balance in the keg. So we have some guidance in the draft beer quality manual in bumping up a little bit from, say, a craft beer to like a domestic beer, right? So if you're putting on something that's at domestic beer level CO2 content, like around 2.7, a little bit higher, we do have a little bit of guidance there. So for one, you can plug things into the Easy Blend app. But this chart in here outlines some some guidance for different blends that you might have on your system, right? 60, 65, 70, 75, 80, and 85. So we, as I said before, 70 and 60% are going to be the two most common blends that you that might be in a cooler. So, for example, this 70% blend right here in a 38-degree cooler, your 2.5 volume beer is going to be somewhere around 20 to 25. Now, notice that's not an exact, number there. That's because when we're dealing with this level of dialing it in, especially when we don't know CO2 content, there's a lot of systems out there that don't have things dialed in exactly. And it's really hard to dial things in to the tenth of a volume. It can be very difficult. So the vast majority of the systems out there, we did some studies, actually we were presented with some studies that our friends at Anheuser-Busch did years ago with the Draft Beer Quality Manual. We looked at these studies and we determined that a lot of systems were out of whack. And the vast majority of systems, beers were either gaining or losing a little bit of carbonation. And the more brewers we talked to and the more we took a close look at this, we really determined that there's an acceptable level of wiggle room for carbonation change in a beer. So if you're going from 2.5 to 2.4 or 2.5 to 2.6, chances are your customer's not going to notice the difference. Chances are you're not going to notice the difference. There's going to be a wiggle room in there where you're not really changing the character of the beer significantly, and we kind of accept that as an acceptable level of wiggle room because, you know, it's where it's scientific, but it's not rocket science, and it's really hard to dial it in. So that's where this wiggle room comes from. So your 2.5 beer, a range of 20 to 25, would keep it within that wiggle room. And then if you want to, if you're putting something higher on, then you're going to get more up into the kind of 23 to 28 range, something a little bit higher range, and just boosting that up. And notice that this is within, you know, this most of these numbers play within that kind of 5 PSI change that'll allow us to do this within a flow rate change that is acceptable. But we can get high carbonated beers on tap that mandate pressure changes that will present problems with flow rate. You might need to apply so much pressure to a keg that now it's coming out of the faucet too fast, and we got to do something about that. And so we adjust the restriction. So that restriction is, again, that resistance to flow, the system resistance. So again, we're getting back to gravity and tubing. So what can we change here? What types of things can we change in a system to add resistance? Because if we're putting a high pressure on a keg that the system's not set up for and the beer's coming out too fast, if we increase the resistance, then we can slow the beer down again and get a manageable flow rate. So looking at, well, first of all, with gravity, we're probably not going to be able to do anything about gravity, right? You're not going to be changing like how high or low your kegs are just to like accommodate a high carbonated beer. That's obviously not realistic. Some other changes aren't really realistic either. Changing anything in your trunk line. So if you have a long draw system, you have a, you know, your trunk line is the beer line bundle that makes the bulk of the run from your cooler to your tower. This is typically pre in a glycol chilled system. This is a, you know, pre-bundled barrier tubing, fixed length. You know, you're not going to be changing this. Your choker line is the tubing that is installed right underneath the tower. That is usually a small diameter tube that that is there to slow the flow down. This is really the big variable the installer has to adjust system restrictions. So they put a high resistance tubing in there to dial in that resistance and get the flow rate that we want. So this, it is possible to change this, so, but it's difficult. Because this is typically a permanent installation. It's insulated, it's taped up, and it's hard to get at. If you were to lay open your system and look at that, you'd probably find, with most modern towers, some stainless tubing inside, some vinyl choker line in there, some small 3/16 diameter tubing in there, possibly some plastic inserts that... there's a couple manufacturers now selling these that float around right under the tower in a fixed piece of tubing. The number of segments you put in there are going to increase or decrease the amount of resistance to flow. So these things can be changed. But again, if you're putting one keg on and it's high carbonated, man, you know, that's a big pain in the ass to lay open your system and change one line just to... only probably change it back when you're putting something different on, right? It's possible, not super realistic. The jumper, on the other hand, if you're looking to do something, change the actual resistance of the system, this is one place where you can. Now, conventional wisdom in draft beer says that you really are not supposed to add resistance in the cooler at the jumper. So the jumper line is typically coming off of your wall bracket or maybe a fob, and it's the flexible tubing that connects that fixed point on the wall to your coupler. It's usually vinyl tubing, and you can change that. It's usually the same diameter as your beer line bundle, which is, in a lot of cases, 3/8 diameter tubing. Well, you could take that 3/8 diameter tubing and cut out part of that and replace it with something with a lot higher restriction. You could see that the 3/8 vinyl is 0.2 pounds per foot, whereas 3/16 is 3 pounds per foot. So you can add almost 3 pounds, or 2.8 pounds, just by changing 1 foot of tubing. So you've added quite a bit. And so general rule of thumb there is that for every pound of restriction, you're going to be changing the flow rate by about 4 ounces a minute. So, that could be significant. So this is one option. You can literally splice in smaller diameter tubing and go from that smaller tubing, and it will go back up to a larger size in your system and then out to the tower. But I have done this successfully many times and had it work out well. It does kind of buck conventional wisdom, but it is possible. You can do this. There's a note in this slide here about limitations with larger serving vessels. So if you are a brewer serving out of large serving tanks, you need to be aware of the effects of gravity. So picture serving out of a 6-foot-tall serving tank, fairly large serving tank. And that thing is full, and you're pulling from the bottom. Your draft line is coming out of the bottom. Not an unusual setup. The weight of that 6 feet of beer is going to be acting against that resistance and is going to be helping to push that beer through the line, right? It's like added pressure on the line. And so if you are changing the resistance to accommodate it with a full tank, you're adding resistance to, you're going to be adding resistance to get the flow rate that already has all this pressure from the tank, from the weight of the liquid in the tank. Now, you've added all this resistance. Well, now, as you empty your tank and you get down near the bottom, you don't have all that weight anymore. And so this is, again, a half pound per foot. That's how that all figures into that, is with the gravity formula. So as you get down lower, now you've got a pretty significant change in flow rate just from the weight of the liquid. So if you're doing a hard change in the resistance of your system with a large serving tank, you're going to see a large variable in there. And so it can be difficult to manage. So it's something to keep in mind. So the maximum flexibility comes with flow control faucets. So you can do a permanent change in your choker line. You could do a somewhat permanent change with a jumper line. Maybe have one that is for, you know, this beer, we're going to put this in. Well, we're putting this other beer on. Now we've got this other jumper ready to go. Whoop, swap it out. Not that big of a deal. Flow control faucets are what are going to give you the maximum flexibility. So using the flow control faucets allows you to increase or decrease resistance on the system right there at the point of dispense. So this does require some training. For years I used to insist that this was a terrible idea to introduce to the U.S. beer market because I had very little faith in the ability of the average bartender. But I have a renewed faith. And I've seen this work successfully. Flow control faucets can be a very helpful thing. You want to make sure that your system is set up for the tubing, that the tubing resistance is set at the low end of your target range, right? So if you're, if the lowest pressure you're going to apply to the line is 12, and you project that you may have you may need to apply a pressure up to 25, you want to make sure that system is restricted when this faucet is fully opened to operate correctly at the 12 PSI, because it does add restriction. It doesn't really subtract restriction. So if you set this up to run at 20 and then you put the beer on that needs 12 PSI, then, you know, you're going to end up flowing too slow. And when you're running at these really high pressures with a high carbonated beer, the volatility of that beer is something that you're going to need to account for, and this goes back to what I said at the beginning, how high carbonated beers might come out of the faucet clear, they might pour completely clear, but when they hit the glass, because there's so much CO2, just the action of hitting the glass breaks the gas out of the beer. And so it can be confounding if you don't realize that that's what's happening, because you see clear beer coming out, but then it hits the glass and now you've got a glass full of foam. How could that possibly be happening? That's just the volatility of the high carbonated beer. So with your flow control faucets, as you're dialing this back for high pressure, maybe you've gone through that flashlight test, for example, and you've determined that, you know, this line that normally has 12 PSI applied to it for the beers that have been on before, gee, now I've got 25 pounds on, which is just a crazy amount of pressure, but now, you know, no bubbles are breaking out anymore. Well, if you're putting that much pressure on the keg, you're going to have to dial that way back, because CO2 content that needs 25 PSI is going to break out like crazy when it hits your glass. So it might take you 30 seconds to fill a glass, right? But you can pour that 3.2 volume or 3.4 volume beer. You can actually get it to go into the glass as opposed to just filling up a glass full of foam. So sometimes you just need to have that thing dialed way back to flow extremely slow, not just to add resistance to the system, but to actually get literally a very slow flow rate so you can handle it in glass. So if you want to get some real flexibility in the system, you can start introducing other gas blends as well. So this is all working within a single gas blend, what we've talked about up till now. If you start introducing other gas blends, you start getting into some real flexibility in a system. So if you have just 70%, for example, coming into your cooler, 70% CO2, and you, say, want to pour a beer anywhere from 2.2 volumes to 3.2 volumes, you're going to have a 15 PSI pressure range that you would probably need to operate in. That's pretty significant from, you know, working with flow controls or making other adjustments to a system. But if you add a second blend, now you can reduce that pressure range to 8 PSI with like 60 and 70%. So now we can work instead of 18 to 33 to go with that CO2 volume range, now we're 24 to 32 pounds. It's a smaller pressure range that we're working within, makes things a little bit more manageable, gives you more flexibility. So There are ways that you can get multiple blends, McDantum blenders. You know, McDantum makes most of the blenders you see in draft systems in the U.S. You can get these custom made. And like a dual blend blender is usually a CO2-rich blend and a nitro blend. Well, you can get that with two different CO2-rich blends. Or you can get a three-blend blender and have a nitro blend and two CO2-rich blends. And then that gives you a lot of flexibility to plug in different blends with just a series of quick disconnects. You can disconnect one blend from a regulator and hook up a different blend to that regulator, and then give yourself more flexibility. And so you can see with a with two CO2-rich blends coming in plus 100% CO2, now we've got a really wide range of CO2 volumes we can work with, two volumes to 4.3. Now, 4.3 is pretty, that's, you know, I doubt many of you are putting 4.3 volumes in there. But just as a point of example, you know, within an 11 PSI range with those three gases, you've got a lot to play with in there. And then you can even get to the point where you can start adding another variable if you are so inclined, like some bars do, where maybe you want to have multiple coolers with different temperature ranges. So those of you who have been to Beechwood Barbecue maybe know Gabe Gordon, who put together this device he calls the flux capacitor, very fancy looking. Essentially, it's a pretty simple mechanism. It looks really cool, but it allows them to plug in any number of different blends into each secondary regulator. So each one of those secondary regulators in that panel goes to an individual keg and has the ability to have one of, it looks like in this, five different gases going to it. So probably three CO2-rich blends, 100% CO2, and probably a nitro blend. And then that goes to different coolers at different temperature ranges, because once you start introducing temperature fluctuations into this equation, now you get really get some pretty wide demands for pressure and for gas blends. So, you know, I've worked with breweries before on setting up similar systems, not exactly with the fancy flux capacitor, but with systems that do essentially the same thing, where you can change multiple gas blends going into a regulator and pouring at different temperatures. So then you could have a chart similar to something like this, where we've got three charts that these are charts I created for one customer where they're pouring beers at 45, 50, and 55 degrees. And depending on the temperature of the beer, you determine what the CO2 content is of the beer, what temperature it's going to be at. And so say you're at 50 degrees, and you've got a 2.2 volume beer, you're going to have 80% at 21 pounds. If you decide you want to pour a 2.9 volume beer at 50 degrees, now you're using 100% at 22 pounds. You're keeping the beer carbonated, and then you're working with flow control faucets to be able to give you that flexibility and to get the flow rate that you want. So that's some next level stuff with the temperature changes, but you know, I've seen a number of places around the country that are starting to do stuff like this. And so I think we've got a little over 5 minutes for some questions. If anybody has any questions. Yeah. So you're saying that that the beer is coming out too fast? Everything. Yeah. So if everything is well balanced in your cooler and it's coming out faster than you like, then you know you can't just turn down the pressure to adjust that flow rate, obviously. So flow control faucets is an option. If you have consistent if you're consistently putting the same carbonation level of beers on, I would recommend making something a little more permanent and going with that, and then using flow control faucets in the instance where you have the high carbonated beer.
I'm a new brew system. I want to do double stacked bright tanks.
Yeah, so you want to do double stacked bright tanks, you said?
Yeah, so what sort of adjustment would you need, because the second one's up higher above your draft lines opposed to coming from below your draft lines?
Yeah, so when you're designing a system, and I designed a system earlier this year for a brewery that has double stacked tanks that they're serving from, and it's simply a different vertical rise figure. So when you figure the restriction from gravity, the 0.5 pounds per foot, you have to figure it different for your top stack than you do your bottom stack.
And then, so is it a bigger choker, or what's the adjustment you'd make?
Well, so when you design that system, so you're going to have, for your higher tanks, there's going to be, you're going to basically have a different restriction. So, you're going to need to put less choker line in the bottom ones, more choker lines in the top ones, because the top ones, you're going to have the kind of the benefit of the gravity working for you.
Okay, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Thank you for the presentation. I just wanted to ask, how does using a beer pump affect what pressure you should be putting on your serving vessel?
So beer pumps can kind of help you in a way, but beer pumps, you're dealing with two different things, right? You're dealing with the applied pressure on the keg that keeps the beer carbonated. So you're kind of and then you have the pump that's dealing with the flow rate. So you're really dealing separately with the two main goals of dispense gas, right? So you got the one pressure that deals with carbonation level. So you can turn that pressure up and get the balance point there, and then adjust your, and insofar as that affects flow rate, you can dial back your pump pressure. So you can play with those. So you first want to do what might end up being like the flashlight test, for example, or if you're looking it up on the chart, if you know the CO2 content, you get that higher pressure on the keg that you need to keep it carbonated, and then you can make pump adjustments to adjust flow rate. You may find that you need some other change in there. Maybe some type of restriction adjustment or flow control if you're putting a whole lot of pressure on it. But chances are that pump is going to give you a little bit of leeway to play around with that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Over a moderately long run, could a difference between the cooler temp set point and the glycol temp set point cause the movement of gas in or out of solution?
Potentially, yeah. So if you're using a blended gas, you're going to have some room for fluctuation of temperature between the cooler and the trunk line. Where you really see minor temperature fluctuations affecting things is when you have straight CO2 on a system. Because if you're at 12, if you're balanced at 12 pounds in your cooler at 38 degrees, you have to stay at 38 degrees. If you go to 39 degrees, now the gas is breaking out. If you're running a blended gas with 22 pounds of pressure, that hydraulic pressure is still that, with the same beer, the breakout point is still going to be really low, right? So it gives you a lot of wiggle room. So you could go to 39, 40, and fluctuate a little bit with that blended gas. It's still going to keep the gas in solution inside the trunk line. So that's there are some notes in the draft beer quality manual about using straight CO2 on remote systems for that exact reason. They can be real problematic because they're very unforgiving.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
I have two hopefully quick questions.
Yeah.
One is, do you have a metric for the best way to measure the actual temperature of your beer? We look at the cold room temperature, but is there a good way to confirm that the beer in that keg has made it to that correct temperature?
Yeah, so I don't rely on the thermometers that you see on the door of the cooler, and I don't measure air temperature. The best way to measure actual temperature is to measure liquid of something that's in the cooler. So if I'm at a retailer or whatever, it could be a bottle of beer that's in the cooler, right? Or maybe take a glass of water and put a thermometer in there and leave it for a day. There's also some manufacturers sell thermometers that are in a tube of liquid that you can mount to the wall, so you get liquid temperature. That's the best way to do it.
The second question is, our system is set up for one keg to push into another. Do the
Series kegs?
Yeah. Do the jumper lines between kegs add to the resistance, or is it only from the front keg?
It's going to be nominal resistance. It's not going to be much. I mean, you're probably using 3/8 tubing, and you probably have maybe 3 or 4 feet in between. So it's going to be nominal.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That was an awesome presentation, and I just wanted to point out to everyone, if you haven't already checked out the Draft Quality Manual from the Brewers Association, it's free. It's an amazing resource. Download it. I think you can order up a copy for $10 if you're a hard copy kind of person like me. It is just an amazing resource. But I was also wondering if you could talk a little bit about hydrostatic effects in a line that goes up and then down, and the kind of breakout that you might get in the middle of that line and what you can do about that.
Yeah, so if you're pushing beer up, if you're running at a low pressure, a relatively low pressure, and you push beer up a long distance, all of the numbers might work out with your resistance and flow rate, but you can get to a point where, you know, each foot you're going up, you kind of subtract a half pound. And even if you're at 22 pounds and you're going 22 pounds of pressure and you're going up, 20 feet, you can go up far enough to where the pressure drops in the line enough to where you get some gas breakout in the line. Is that what you're referring to?
In particular, the situation, say you're running a draft line on the top of your walk-in, 10 or 15 feet up or something like that, and then it's coming back down to a lower level. Is that the type of situation where blended gas might become necessary, even though the sort of drop later in the line is going to offset the rise?
Yeah, the effects that you get of gas breakout as the lines go very high up, and the effects of gravity as you get that pressure drop in those half-pound increments per foot, you can get below the breakout point where the gas breaks out. It's important in those systems to make sure that your starting pressure is a lot higher. So sometimes, your 100% CO2 is a relatively low pressure, and everything might be designed correctly, but you're just going up too high, and you get to the point where the gas breaks out at that high point, in which case a blended gas is not going to allow that to happen. Or maybe a 70% would allow it to happen, but a 60%, since it's a higher operating pressure, would not allow that to happen. Also, at the same time, it's important to note that when you do go up and then back down, that those numbers cancel each other out from the actual flow rate resistance calculation that you get of your gravity, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for the adjustable faucets, what kind of range of adjustment PSI-wise?
Well, you get a pretty wide range, and you can, the flow lever will actually bring you all the way down to where the beer just simply shuts off. It's going to vary depending on manufacturer. I don't have the actual specs of how many pounds it's actually adding onto there, but you've got a pretty wide range in there. Mm-hmm.
Is there ever a reason not to do blended, like on a 5 to 10 foot draw with really high carb beers? Is it worth setting up a blended mix, or should I just stick with regular CO2?
My general rule of thumb is that if the lines leave the cooler and you have some type of other cooling system for the lines, either a blower system or glycol, I usually go with blended gas. It's generally a safer bet.
But if the faucets are on the other side of the cooler wall, then...
If the faucets are on the other side of the cooler wall, CO2 is probably your best bet. Unless the lines are really long inside the cooler and it's like a special situation.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you.
Uh-huh. All right. I think that wraps us up. If anybody has any more questions, I'm happy to talk to you afterwards. Thanks a lot.